This is America. The sleepless economy of this vast country is busy producing and consuming day and night. The driving force of this enormous economic wheel is only one thing: oil.
Well, it was well known they want the petrol. Petrol was very important for America. Where is the petrol? The petrol is in the Middle East.
Well, there was always conflict between different forces, kind of fighting over resources, fighting over, you know, land. Intervention of powerful forces like Britain, like the United States.
Solo il petrolio che va negli Stati Uniti o in Europa. Vogliono controllare il petrolio che serve tutti gli altri paesi.
This is America, the sleepless economy of this vast country with a population of 350 million is busy producing and consuming day and night. The full manifestation of modern capitalism that is the focus of worried glances from all over the world has drowned the feelings of the children of past immigrants and present residents of the United States in a spectacular ecstasy of visual beauties and pleasures. The driving force of this enormous economic wheel is only one thing: oil. US oil consumption is about 25% of the world's total oil consumption. Despite this voracious appetite, the United States oil reserves account for only 5% of the world's total reserves. Experts believe that the country's reserves will come to an end in 15 years.
Well, it was well known they want the petrol.
It is clear that they want oil. Oil is very important to America. Where is the oil? In the Middle East. It might be found in Africa as well, but the Middle East was the main option for oil.
Interesting, I think, for the petrol.
Dick Cheney, advisor to the former president of the United States, also refers to the US growing dependence on oil imports, especially the Persian Gulf's oil, and says America's dependence on the Persian Gulf's oil will grow by 85% in 2020 and 95% in 2030. If we add Central Asia, the Caspian Sea, and North and Northeast Africa to the Persian Gulf region, we will reach the Greater Middle East, a region which is host to about two-thirds of the world's proven oil reserves.
The relations between the US and the Middle East go back to the 19th century. I think the first case of America's interference in the region happened in the first decade of the 19th century, and it involved the small war that the US Navy waged against Ottoman pirates in the Mediterranean near the coast of Libya.
E poi bisogna arrivare, diciamo, alla fine della Prima Guerra Mondiale.
Then we come to 1901 to 1909 with Wilson. Morocco happened before that. Roosevelt's government interfered in that matter. During the Roosevelt's presidency, the U.S. interfered in Morocco's crisis.
E c'è stata un'attenzione degli Stati Uniti dovuta al fattore petrolio essenzialmente.
Later on, after World War I, we come to Wilson and his foreign policy. In those years, the United States' attention was drawn to the region's oil. We can say that between 1900 to the 1950s or the 1960s, although the United States was an oil producer, big American and English oil companies focused their attention on the oil-rich Middle East. And that is why Wilson adopted a policy with his 14-point principles, especially the so-called principle of the right to self-determination for all the nations of the world, that actually worked toward the insecurity and breakdown of the Ottoman Empire by taking advantage of the imaginary ideal of self-determination for other nations.
In modo astratto, la questione dell'autodecisione, di destabilizzazione e divisione dell'impero ottomano.
Well, first of all, you have to understand what is the policy? Why do we have wars in the Middle East? What's behind it? Why is there so much conflict? Well, there was always conflict between, you know, different forces, you know, kind of fighting over resources, fighting over, you know, land, fighting over positioning. You know, that's not new. But what is new is the intervention of powerful forces like, you know, colonial powers like Britain, for example, unlike the United States.
In the 19th century, the issue of East or the breakdown of Ottoman Empire was on the mind of the US and Europe, but it acquired greater importance after the discovery of oil. So Wilson's principle about the right of nations to self-determination was not applied to the Indians in America or other nations colonized by the US. Instead, it was used as a pretext for provoking the Arabs and disintegrating the Ottoman Empire, an empire that had maintained its balance despite everything.
In Iran, the overthrow of Mossadegh, for example, you know, he was a minister who was, you know, a nationalist. He really wasn't a communist. He wanted the oil for Iran. And what happened? He got overthrown by the CIA.
People loved Mossadegh. He was an influential politician because of his popularity and because he nationalized the oil industry. Britain started Iran's oil embargo, after which the international community refused to purchase Iran's oil because they wanted to punish Iran for nationalizing the oil industry. At that time, the US fully controlled Saudi Arabia's oil production, and if the Saudis saw Iran's success in nationalizing its oil industry, they might have tried to follow in Iran's footsteps. It was like this: look, we don't want anyone to interfere in this matter. Therefore, the international community and major oil companies decided to sanction Iran.
That's the story. The story is not always on the surface. It's behind the scenes.
If you look at the energy reserves in the Middle East, you will see America's fascination with this region more clearly. Saudi Arabia, 265 billion barrels. Iraq, 220 billion barrels. The UAE, 136.7 billion barrels. Kuwait, 101.5 billion barrels. Iran, 151.2 billion barrels. Qatar, 25.5 billion barrels. And Oman, 30.2 billion barrels of oil, which makes a total of more than 853 billion barrels of oil. Meanwhile, the average amount of oil extraction by the four big producers of the OPEC was 100 times the average oil production of the American oil wells, while the production costs were half of the cost of oil production in the United States.
How much does it cost Saudi Arabia to produce one barrel of oil?
This is an excellent question. It is very small, very little. It's probably less than $2 to produce a barrel.
The desire to get hold of such great resources makes America resort to any plan.
Bush built his government on the basis of a strategic concept, a concept that was stated clearly by neoconservative thinkers, that the U.S. needed to prevent its potential competitors from becoming powerful in order to maintain its role as the dominant power in the world. And that was not possible without strengthening America's military power and domination. In the framework of this great strategy, the project of the Great Middle East was developed, establishing the order that the U.S. desired in the entire region, at a stretch from Morocco to Central Asia, needed to be considered as well. A region that was highly vulnerable due to dispersions and was located between areas that could turn into America's competitors in the future. That's why dominating this area gave the U.S. an opportunity to control its future potential competitors and take hold of their vital lifeline, the oil and gas industries.
If we consider this scene of conflict against the current situation of the world and the crisis that has spread throughout the world at the moment, we will realize that the situation is getting more and more dangerous. Why is that? It's because Europe and the United States do not have any resources, and they need to have them. They also want the absolute control of all those resources.
Per chi non capisce qual è la situazione, la si vede sulla carta geografica molto facilmente.
If anyone wants to understand the situation better, they only need to look at the map. Over the past decade, there have been numerous wars, so the belief that we need to possess all the resources and have them all to ourselves is a bit naive, because U.S. President Ronald Reagan once said something that was later on repeated by George Bush, the other U.S. president. The well-being of Americans is non-negotiable.
Ma questa frase vuol dire semplicemente la guerra. Se tu pretendi.
And this sentence is simply a declaration of war. The expectation that the Americans alone consume one-third of the world's energy and produce one-third of the world's CO2, which increases the global warming, belongs to the time that the U.S. was an empire.
Possibile solo fino a che gli Stati Uniti erano un impero.
Zalmay Khalilzad, former United States Ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, and the United Nations, and Director of the Research Center for Unocal Oil Company, reveals the true reason behind America's presence in the Middle East more clearly. In an article, he states, "Everyone who has oil has the leadership of the world." Khalilzad was a signatory to the Zionist neoconservatives' letter in 1998 about toppling Saddam in order to set a domino plan in motion and overthrow regional governments to protect the US interests and get access to the Arabs' oil. The importance of this topic can be seen in America's response to the Soviets' invasion of Afghanistan. After the attack, which would bring the Soviet Union about 1,000 kilometers to the Persian Gulf and its oil, Carter sent the US task forces to the canal, acknowledging that any attempt by others to reach the Persian Gulf and dominate its oil will be seen as a threat to the US interests, and the US will even respond with military action.
Let me point out that at the end of his presidency, President Clinton said that the 21st century will be America's century.
For 209 years, it has been the President's duty to report to you on the State of the Union. Because of the hard work and high purpose of the American people, these are good times for America.
Il ventunesimo secolo non è il secolo americano.
It is obvious even from now that the 21st century is not America's century, but the Americans still think that it is so and have not abandoned their domination plans. These domination plans are the same old ones. They think that by seizing control of energy resources and controlling the planet in terms of energy, they will be able to continue to maintain their status.
Since September 11, 2001, the U.S. has justified its presence in the Middle East in the name of fighting terrorism. However, we all know that it is just a pretext.
Dans l'ensemble du Moyen-Orient, à partir de le 11 septembre 2001, tout le monde connaît cet événement.
Of course, it should not be forgotten that this reason, that is, the terrorists, does exist and needs to be fought, but certainly not in the way the U.S. has chosen.
Je veux dire, le terrorisme a réellement existé, il fallait le combattre, mais peut-être pas dans de la façon dont l'Amérique s'y est prise.
Smoking! Yeah, bitch!
After that incident, we witnessed a military intervention in Afghanistan and then subsequent interventions in order to bring democracy to the Arabs, for example, Iraq and more recently Libya.
Donc l'Irak, ensuite récemment, plus récemment, la Libye.
After the September 11 incident, America's leading officials and media outlets started to talk about the necessity of overthrowing the Taliban and their atrocities in Afghanistan. Just 5 years earlier, the situation was quite the opposite. The Wall Street Journal had written, "In this moment of history, the Taliban are the best players who have the ability to bring peace to Afghanistan." When the Taliban captured Kabul, Chris Taggart, spokesperson for the American oil company, Unocal, said,
"Okay, my name's Chris Taggart. I'm an open data entrepreneur."
Now we have more hope in implementing these projects. If the Taliban achieves stability and international recognition, then it'll be perfect.
If you look at the reality, the Brightest had a contract with the Taliban. We had landlocked oil and gas deals. We had to get it to the ocean. We had people actually doing business in Pakistan. You literally have to look at 9/11 and all of those foregoing issues as inseparable.
Unocal is the oil company that was tasked with implementing the Turkmenistan-Afghanistan gas pipeline. But the resistance of Ahmad Shah Massoud and other Afghan fighters ruined their calculations and forced the US to enter the region on its own.
Pakistan plays a very important role in this. Pakistan is obviously one of the most targeted countries, slightly different ways. With Pakistan, the key is oil and the idea of an oil corridor between Iran or even Iraq on the one side, and China on the other. Biggest single problem of China is they need oil. They would need to have a corridor, a pipeline, going from Iran, Iraq, some version of that, up through Pakistan. The words for this are Pipelinistan, that's Pakistan, or the Pakistan Energy Corridor. So what's the US approach to that? This is contained in Obama's West Point speech of December 2009. Basically, it's to say there's been a civil war in Afghanistan for decades, and there will be, probably. Let's export that civil war into Pakistan. Let's push it into Pakistan so that we can have the breakup of Pakistan, the smashing of the Pakistani state, mini states. So we'll have Pashtunistan, we'll have Sindh, we'll have Punjab, and we'll have Balochistan.
At the Gas Exporting Countries Forum in 2010, Vladimir Putin declared that the era of cheap gas was over. This means political use of energy pipelines. Also in his meeting with José Manuel Barroso, the president of the European Commission in early 2011, Putin was very critical of Europe's policies on liquid gas. He warned that if Europe continued on its course, Russia, which was aware of the world's growing need for liquid gas, would turn part of the gas it exported to Europe into liquid in order to export to other countries and raise the price of the part that was actually exported to Europe.
We have already paid Ukraine $2.5 billion for transit. Let the Europeans throw in a lousy billion. Why have they become so stingy down there? They have money too. Let them get something out of their pockets.
Between 2006 and 2009, Russia cut off its gas exports to Ukraine, citing avarice as the reason behind this action. Thus, it could win against Europe in that political struggle.
Unocal pipeline plays a role, but you notice there is no Unocal pipeline, and there's not going to be. Right? Even with all these wars, 10 years of war, no Unocal pipeline. For example, one thing that would represent a strategic revolution in the world would be an oil pipeline starting in Iran. It could start in Iraq. It would go through Pakistan, right, the so-called Pipelinistan or Pakistan Energy Corridor. It would go into China above the Himalayas, and with this, the number one strategic problem of the Chinese would be solved. And it would also create a powerful common interest among Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, China. It could go into India. This would be even better. This would mean a powerful common interest of even India and Pakistan. We could begin to overcome the long-term friction between India and Pakistan. This is what the Anglo-Americans are determined to prevent. To smash. This is why they want to divide Pakistan into those four or five competing micro-states or mini-states. And I say micro-states and mini-states because this is the term used by Zbigniew Brzezinski in his most recent theoretical works, right? The rump state, the pathetic, defenseless, impotent little entity which is helpless in the face of ExxonMobil, J.P. Morgan Chase, Blackwater, Halliburton, or whoever it is.
Journalist and historian Mr. Engel has to say more. He said the ultimate goal of the United States is to take the resources of Africa and Middle East under military control in order to block economic growth in China and Russia, thus taking the whole of Eurasia under control. Now, you may not know it now, but America is already at war with China and Russia.
E questi progetti di potenza sono gli stessi progetti di prima.
They think that by seizing control of energy resources and controlling the earth in terms of energy, they will manage to maintain their position. From this perspective, controlling Iran's oil is very important, because part of Iran's oil is exported to China and India.
Perché il petrolio iraniano va anche in Cina.
They are not satisfied with controlling the oil that goes to the US and Europe. They want to control the oil that is needed by all countries, especially their potential competitors. Therefore, the US is keeping a strategic eye on Iran because Iran is the last country in the Middle East which is outside of their control.
L'Iran è l'ultimo paese del Medio Oriente che è al di fuori del loro controllo.
First of all, you have to understand what is the policy? Why do we have wars in the Middle East? What's behind it? Why is there so much conflict? Well, there was always conflict between, you know, different forces, you know, kind of fighting over resources, fighting over, you know, land, fighting over positioning. You know, that's not new. But what is new is the intervention of powerful forces like, you know, colonial powers like Britain, for example, unlike the United States.
How much does it cost Saudi Arabia to produce one barrel of oil?
This is an excellent question. It is very small, very little. It's probably less than $2 to produce a barrel.
Zalmay Khalilzad, former United States Ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, and the United Nations, and Director of the Research Center for Unocal Oil Company, reveals the true reason behind America's presence in the Middle East more clearly. In an article, he states, "Everyone who has oil has the leadership of the world."
For 209 years, it has been the President's duty to report to you on the State of the Union. Because of the hard work and high purpose of the American people, these are good times for America.
Between 2006 and 2009, Russia cut off its gas exports to Ukraine, citing avarice as the reason behind this action. Thus, it could win against Europe in that political struggle.
Mr. Engel has to say more. He said the ultimate goal of the United States is to take the resources of Africa and Middle East under military control in order to block economic growth in China and Russia, thus taking the whole of Eurasia under control.
You know, Iran is a country that has oil that other people want. It's a country that has a big market that other people want. It's a country that has a government that many in the West see as threatening, physically threatening and threatening as an example, as a government that's going another way than the normal, you know, pro-Western capitalist countries.
And Iran, because of its location on the Persian Gulf and control or possible ability to block the Strait of Hormuz, this is a real threat to them.
Part of the Strait of Hormuz that is navigable is only 3 kilometers in width, and it passes either through or close to Iranian islands. According to America's Energy Information Administration, 16.5 to 17 million barrels of oil exported from the Persian Gulf have to pass through the Strait of Hormuz every day. This shipment consists of 88% of Saudi Arabia's oil, 90% of Iran's oil, 98% of Iraq's oil, 99% of the UAE's oil, and 100% of Kuwait and Qatar's oil. There is no alternative route for those exports. The US is fully aware of the importance of this route and knows that it can act as a winning card in its hand or in the hands of its rivals and enemies, including Iran, in any potential conflict. In case of serious conflict with Iran, the closure of the Strait of Hormuz will lead to significant rise in oil prices. Then, only countries with high foreign reserves, like China and Japan, will be able to survive this crisis. Buying expensive oil is definitely preferable to engaging in war with Iran.
I don't think there's any difficulty in closing the Straits of Hormuz. 1988, I was in Turkey during 1988, and you had these mines that were floating around, and that pretty much stopped the tanker traffic because Lloyd's of London announced that they wouldn't provide maritime insurance because it was too expensive, too risky for them, and that pretty much put a stop to it. I mean, if you look at the Iranian coast, the use of mines is the obvious thing.
The U.S. has always tried to find a replacement for the Persian Gulf's existing resources. One of those options was Central Asia and the Caspian Sea region, which hold the maximum amount of hydrocarbons after the Persian Gulf and Siberia. This region is so important that some people call it the heartland of the 21st century. Its importance does not lie only in its huge reserves, but also in its strategic location. In his book, The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives, Berezinski says, "Dominating Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Gorgistan is not only because of their energy resources, but also because this region is like an American police station in the Persian Gulf."
The oil and gas in the Caspian Basin, in current dollars, is worth somewhere between $11 and $12 trillion. They kept them tied up at least from 1998. They're involved in Pakistan, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan in about 20 different ways.
According to the International Atomic Energy Agency's estimations, the reserves of the Caspian Sea and Central Asia are between 90 to 200 billion barrels, and the gas reserves of the Caspian Sea are estimated at 279 trillion cubic feet. The existing reserves of the Persian Gulf and the Caspian Sea amount to a total of 70 and 40% of the world's oil and natural gas. Afghanistan's oil and gas resources in the north should be added to this figure. These resources are more than 5.1 billion barrels of oil, 500 billion cubic meters of natural gas, and 562 million barrels of liquid gas.
Well, Central Asia, Kazakhstan and other areas has oil. And yes, there's a lot of oil, and controlling or destabilizing these other areas is helpful to the hegemon's goal of easy extraction of oil at reasonable prices from their perspective. And so if you can destabilize other regimes or put puppets in order to control them, then it makes things easier for the extraction process.
A four-star U.S. Army General, Wesley Clark. Have you heard that name before? Well, let me tell you what he said. He said that 10 years before 9/11, Paul Wolfowitz, I want you to keep remembrance of these names, because these are a part of a shadow government. Let me say it again. Mr. Clark said Wolfowitz, the neocon architect of Bush's war on Iraq, told him of plans to clean out the Middle East and take over those Muslim nations. Just 10 days after 9/11, Clark was shown a Pentagon memo that describes how they planned to take out seven countries, Muslim countries, in 5 years, starting with Iraq, then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and then Iran. They call this project the Greater Middle East Project. But for the public and the media, they're calling it the Arab Spring.
You can see the idea. The Anglo-American policy is to destroy every one of these nation states. What do they expect to get instead? Micro states, mini states, warlords, secession, or chaos. Chaos is perfectly acceptable to them. The only part of Libya that they care about is the oil part. The rest can go to hell. And similarly in other countries, right? The mask is freedom, human rights, singing tomorrows, the internet, Twitter, Facebook, Google, all this stuff. But if you fight back, as Gaddafi did, they drop the mask and the bombs begin to fall. So the color revolution is a kind of a preferred option. But if that doesn't work, they will then try direct military attack.
I mean, in Libya, when the fighting started, nearly 100,000 Chinese had to leave Libya. They weren't in Libya sightseeing. They were working throughout Libya, building infrastructure for development.
Look, I've been in Libya and Syria in the past 6 months. I was in Libya during the NATO bombing. I was in Syria last November. So in the case of Libya, Gaddafi is targeted because of his independence, his oil, his water. It's one of the most, I think, positive things that's been done in North Africa in many, many years. Gaddafi had also brought Libya to number 57 on the UN Human Development ranking. So Gaddafi was ahead of Russia, ahead of Ukraine, ahead of Brazil, ahead of a lot of places around the world. And he was number one in Africa.
Chaos reigns in Libya. The situation is tense in Egypt as well, and chaos is not unlikely. Strengthening such chaos is a control method, the same oil divide and rule method, because when all the parties are in a dispersed state, no one can threaten America's interest anymore. The policies that the Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafis adopted in Egypt toward the US and Israel are more conservative than the real policies. I have already mentioned the reason for that. When these groups are faced with a diverse society in Egypt and are involved in an internal power struggle, they no longer have enough courage to publicly challenge the US and Israel. The Americans made their decisions according to the countries they faced. Every time they saw a country that was bothersome, they supported its downfall. But when governments favor them, even if they were dictators like Bahrain or Saudi Arabia, the Americans supported those governments, not those who had risen up for democracy.
But the most important Arab country for the US is Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia produces 9 million barrels of crude oil on a daily basis and has the largest proven reserves of oil. It makes up about 10% of the world's oil reserves. So Saudi Arabia is considered the largest producer of this strategic commodity. Any instability in Saudi Arabia will result in significant rise in oil prices for the US and Europe. After the recent events in Libya through the interference of NATO, a $5 to $20 increase was witnessed in the prices. Although Libya's oil production was only about 2 million barrels a day and insignificant compared to Saudi Arabia. If something like that happens, the US and the West's economy will collapse, because unlike their main competitors, China and Japan, they do not have the ability to purchase oil. Such a situation may even lead to their political collapse. According to the estimations of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, and the International Energy Agency, a $15 to $25 increase in oil prices will result in a 0.5% decline in the economic growth of industrialized countries every year.
So I think they will protect their interests.
That's why I think they will protect their interests over there. Forget about options. It's quite clear. They need to take care of the oil route that passes through the Far East.
Something to be very vigilant on the road from the Far East for the petrol, you know.
Political debates are a means to an end in this case. They are not interested in regional situations because of ideological reasons. Internal affairs only gain importance when they become related to the position of the Middle East countries against foreign powers. So their goal in the Middle East is not exporting democracy for freedom for women. Their goal is putting the Middle East in line with US global strategies.
People's wall of fear has collapsed in the Arab countries. Le Monde wrote about popular uprisings. The West's message to these countries' leaders was that they had to continue exporting oil at a low price and leave Israel alone. Then they could do whatever they wanted with their people. This process resulted was degrading for Middle Easterners, bringing them to the verge of explosion. As the world's biggest oil producer and owner and longtime US ally, Saudi Arabia has met some hardship in its leadership in recent years, and it has caused serious concerns for the White House.
Behind the scenes, there's another agenda in Washington, and everyone's talking about it. Privately. It's not in the US media.
It's in the European media, maybe in the Canadian media, but not in the U.S. media, and that is Bush is an oil man, Cheney is an oil man. They're not unmindful of the fact that Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the entire world outside of Saudi Arabia. Mm. U.S. citizens don't know that.
Quoting a sentence from The Hydrogen Economy, a book written by Jeremy Rifkin, looks suitable here. The proven reserves to oil production ration in America and Norway is 10 years. Canada, 8 years. Iran, 53 years. The UAE, 75 years. Kuwait, 116 years. Saudi Arabia, 55 years. And Iraq, 526 years. It is evident that Iraq can be considered an important alternative to Saudi Arabia's oil at the moment.
Niente, ma non volevano fare niente di positivo.
Nothing. They had no intention of doing anything positive from the very beginning. It's simple. Nothing. As I said, the purpose of the war was not occupying Iraq. Their objective was seizing Iraq's oil fields. Those fields are now under U.S. control. They belong to Iraq but are in America's hands. So they have full control over Iraq's oil extractions. From a political point of view, that country does not have political importance. There is a civil war going on there, accompanied by constant bomb explosions. This is great for them because it provides the Americans with an opportunity to maintain their important military bases in Baghdad and other parts of Iraq. They certainly do not need to occupy the country with their military forces because it is too costly and useless. It is sufficient to have political dominance over the events. That is what military bases are for. If the Iraqi government behaves badly, they can target it, replace it, and change it.
Iraq and Iran have huge oil and gas reserves, and both of them are important members of the OPEC. If they get too close to each other and match their oil policies at the OPEC, the international oil industry will be greatly affected. This is what the US and the West are trying hard to prevent.
They're used to starting targeted wars in countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya, targeting a single country. They are full-fledged colonial wars. Instead of occupying the country, they bring a puppet government to power, a government which is tasked with protecting the U.S. interests. It happened in Kosovo. At first, they started a war in Kosovo and then won it. Since the country could not defend itself, military bases were set up in the country. Their presence continued in the country for some time, and then they retreated, leaving their military bases behind. So the purpose of today's wars is not defending the enemy. It's bringing the enemy to its knees, establishing military bases on its soil, and creating a state of chaos. This is what suits them best.
Chaos. Questo è quello che serve a loro.
The goal of this oligarchy is to maintain U.S.-British world domination in the form of a world empire, which is mediated through the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, with NATO as an enforcement arm of all that, sort of being the policeman of the system. Right now, there are many signs of a breakdown crisis, a disintegration of the US-British empire. So therefore, what we're seeing is this ruling elite between the City of London and Wall Street. They're coming up with some very desperate tactics to to maintain their empire, to try to get another 100 years of US-British world domination. And the only way you can do this is essentially to destroy all nation states, all national governments on the planet. And that is what they're in the process of doing.
Listen, in 1974, Henry Kissinger, who was then Secretary of State under President Nixon, signed National Security Study Memorandum 200, titled, quote, Implications of Worldwide Population Growth for U.S. Security and Overseas Interests. It was adopted as official policy in 1975 by President Gerald Ford. Listen, depopulation. You know what that means? I'm gonna say it again. Can you spell? You look it up. Depopulation should be the highest priority of U.S. foreign policy towards the Third World. How they plan to take out 7 countries, Muslim countries, in 5 years is warfare. Depopulation. You know what that means? I'm gonna prove what I say, even at the cost of my own life. You can take it or let it alone.
You coming left.
Listen to your brother
left.
From America.
Come left.
Golf 73, out of 75.